Parsha. A Reisman. A lot of people, Baruch Hashem, live in a generation where
they're
living.
Livinoni, correct.
Livinoni.
His name is
really nice. Livinoni, Arise, there are a lot of people today. Ribbis, Baruch Hashem, became a very, very big topic. There are even institutions. There are hotlines. Hotlines you can call 24/7. You can call us numbers to discuss different shas of Ribbis. Ribbis is a very, very big topic. In this week's parasha, it says, "Mikay Sheva Hashem Tase Shmita." Okay, then after Shmita, it's interesting that the word that Ribbis is in the same pasuk as Shmita. That itself is a very, very telling idea. Mikay Sheva Shanim. Ta'ase Shmita. By the way, this coming year is Shmita, right? You didn't get a letter yet from the Keren HaShvius to donate money?
Yeah.
This year is a Shmita year. This coming year is Shmita. You do not need to make a prosbul. This Rosh Hashanah, Shmita is Meshamet at the end. Okay, Shmita is Meshamet, not at the beginning of the year. Shmita is Meshamet at the end of the year. This is the matter of Zedvar Hashmita Shamoit. Shamoit means to release, to relinquish. Kol Bal Mashe Yodo. Every person who is has a claim, Asher Yasher Bireyehu, who has a claim against his friend, Lo Yigoy Sesre, you may not make a claim against your friend, via Sochiv, Ki Koro Shmita Lashem Ita Shmita. On the other hand, as hanochri tigois, the nochri you may bite. The word tigois, you may demand payment. The asher yelucho esachicha tashmet yodecha, but that which you have against your brother, if you have a claim against your brother, then you should let go. FS, and then it goes on to say, These are laws of Shmita. How am I getting over here into a Neshech? One second. Wait one second. What am I doing over here? Where is Ribbis? Did I make a mistake? There's no Ribbis here. One second over here. Did I make a mistake? Maybe there's no Ribbis in this parasha. What does she say? 15, what did you say? 15:1, that's Mikay Sheva Shan Tase Shmita. That's Shmita. Mikay Sheva Shan Tase Shmita. The Zedra Shmita, the Shemot Balkol Masha Yadoy, Asher Yashav Rei, Lo Yigos HaZechu, Tigois, Asher Yashav Rei, Tashmi Yedech, maybe I made a mistake. This week there is no Shmita. There is no Ribbis.
That's interesting.
Okay, it doesn't matter. We'll still talk about it anyway. I thought it was this week's parasha. I thought it was Aser to Aser. I made a mistake. Baruch Hashem, I made a mistake. Okay, it's not in this week's parasha. It's not in this week's parasha. There is no mitzvah of Shemitah. There is some reason. I don't know why I thought it was in this week's parasha. There is no mitzvah of Ribbis in this week's parasha, but we can still talk about Ribbis. It does have something similar to Shemitah, in that they are from the only things, I believe, where it says that the Nochri you should do, and to a Jew you should not do. By Shmita, it says, when Shmita comes, the Shmita does not release, does not cancel a loan that you have against a non-Jew. Es hanochri tigois. you shall demand the payment. But only the asher yelecha esachicha tashmid yodecha. But what you have against your fellow brother or Jew, that you may not demand payment. By ribis, it says exactly the same thing. It says es hanochri. That's when it comes to shmidim. So tigos means to demand payment, to collect. By neshech is the term that is used in regard to ribis. This means to take a bite. It says a goy, you should take a bite out of a goy. You shall bite a Gentile, but a Jew you should not bite. A Jew, you're not allowed to take ribis from a Jew. A Gentile, you are permitted to take ribis. These two things, where the Torah tells us a similar concept, that it is forbidden to behave in such a manner with a Jew, but a non-Jew it is permitted. Both of them share in common the idea of money, of demanding money. There's a contrast being presented between the way we conduct ourselves with non-Jews versus the way we conduct ourselves with Jews. Why is it that in both of these cases we have this similarity? So here's the dilemma. The dilemma is, the reason why the Torah tells us that you shall be very unforgiving when it comes to a non-Jew, both that when Shemitah comes, it doesn't matter, you owe me money, pay up. I don't care. If you don't pay up, I'm going to repossess your property. By a Jew, there's no such thing. Likewise, when it comes to ribis, the Torah tells you lend the person money, tell them that there's going to be a surcharge. There's going to be payment for the fact, the charge for the fact that the money is not in my possession during this period of time. You are going to have to pay for that. Why is that so? Why is it so that when it comes to these two things, we are much more demanding by goyim than by Jews? Either you can say it's because we want to subjugate the goy. It's dominance, Jewish dominance over Gentiles. When you lend a non-Jew money, take advantage. Take advantage to show that Klal Yisrael, we are the Am HaNifar, HaKadosh Baruch has selected us. We are special, we are elite, we are elitist. And therefore, if you lend a non-Jew money, take advantage. Charge him ribis. They do it among themselves. So that's right, charge them. I lend you $100, you can pay me back $150. Charge him for the privilege of borrowing my money. When it comes to Shemitah, there's no such thing as cancellation of debt. Okay, in the world, there is such a principle in the economy of where it can be healthy at times for there to be a forgiveness, even in the secular world. Say, in the secular world, there is such a principle of looking in America. America, there's the rules of bankruptcy. What is it all about, bankruptcy? It's the most bizarre thing you've ever heard of. You have a company, you take in merchandise, the business doesn't go well, okay, I declare bankruptcy, I don't have to pay you back. Is that crazy? Does that make any sense to you? There's a law that you can declare bankruptcy. No obligation, no accountability. No accountability for sloppy behavior in dealing with. Someone's going to lose the money. If you take an inventory, you take merchandise in a big department store, so they've taken merchandise from many different vendors, and now you have, and now the business is not doing well. Okay, we declare bankruptcy. All of the employees, you all fired. No, on your way out, you know, as a perk, you can take home some of the merchandise. What do you mean? The merchandise, the money is owed to the company, to the people who put the merchandise in the store. No, the law protects us. We declare bankruptcy. All the people who gave us merchandise, they were fools. We fooled them. We presented ourselves as a viable, vibrant company. Too bad for them. The concept of bankruptcy is connected kol ha-Torah. And I'm making sure there are many from people, many very people that are really from, for real, that when if the Rahman would suddenly out in the business and they declare bankruptcy, they don't take advantage. It's an incredible thing. They don't take advantage of the American law, even by going. To a degree, of course. I'm not going to go. To a degree, of course.
There are workouts.
Okay, this is complicated. Bankruptcy is not just dry and cut. It's not dry and cut. It's a complicated principle. But the principle basically says that you're not responsible to pay for money, to pay money that's owed. I mean, that's a really extreme thing, which really appears.
The whole idea is to protect you from debtors until it's organized.
Right.
In a favorable way, in a reasonable way.
In a reasonable way, at the end of the day, in every single bankruptcy, someone is losing a lot of money. So how could that possibly be? You were sloppy. You took in merchandise into your store in an irresponsible, if you knew in the back of your mind that if you cannot sell the merchandise, you have problems in the business, you will owe money for the rest of your life to pay off the debt of what you've taken in, you would not have taken in this merchandise. You would have acted in a much more responsible way. Businesses take risks that are not fair because they know in the back of their mind they are protected by laws of bankruptcy. There's no liability.
Personal liability.
That principle appears to be kineged kol ha-toyrah.
It's also credit card debt. People are paying credit cards. You know, they have no money to replace them. And it's like the banks, after a certain amount, they have...
The moichel you.
They take a percentage.
Not me.
You got 5% or something like that. They don't take anything to get you off the books. And okay. Also tuition, you know, credit.
All right, that's a different story altogether.
That's an older business. You know, $50,000 a year, you know, going to the students or whatever it is.
Bankruptcy is a very bizarre thing. The Torah V'yah says, look at the Torah. The Torah V'yah says, Es hanochri tigois. If a guy owes you money, you collect that money, no matter what. Bankruptcy. This, through these three words in the pasuk over here, in Parashas Re'eh, is telling you that the principle of bankruptcy is kineged kol ha-Torah kula. If someone owes you money, collect. But what about the Jews? The Jews, when it comes Shemitah, the loans are canceled. So you do find such a principle of cancellation of loans. Okay, that has to be discussed, why that is true when it comes to Jews. Okay, but let's put that aside for now. Okay, so Din de Malchus, let's put that aside, 100%. But just let's do the concepts of not paying back money that is owed. Here, in this parasha, it tells you that if a non-Jew owes a Jew money, you make sure you collect that money no matter what. Even though at this time, a Jew in a similar situation is exempt from paying you back the money, the non-Jew must pay back the money. Now, why does the Torah have to mention this? So either you'll say, world dominance. The Jews are elitists. We are the Am HaNivchar. And when Klal Yisrael is Oseh Ritzono Shel Malkam, the non-Jews have to be put in their place and to understand where they stand in this world relative to Klal Yisrael. Es HaNochri Tigos. This is one side of the dilemma. Or you'll say, no, I don't like that. Some people don't like to hear that. They say Jews are not, they're not dominating people. We're not trying to go and put anyone in their place. We're not trying to take advantage of the fact that we're the Am HaNivchar. Chas v'sholom, Jews, they are humble people. They stay out of the limelight. They keep to themselves. They're never ever going to go raise any, make a big deal about it. The reason why we contrast collecting money from a guy is for one purpose only, to appreciate what it means to be moichel your fellow Jew. Because when you're going to have in front of you two situations, Shemitah has passed, and you have IOUs. There's a guy who owes me money, and there's a Jew who owes me money. If the halacha would be the same for both, then you don't have to pay me back the money. You're not going to appreciate what that means. You only appreciate something in life, or anything for that matter, when it's contrasted with what it's not. And this goes both ways. The Jew who owes the money appreciates what it means, I don't have to pay back the money, when he sees that he also has IOUs from Gentiles who he demands payment from. And he knocks on their door and he says, you owe me money. And he sees how painful it is to pay back money that he doesn't have. A Jew has an IOU from a non-Jew. Give me my money. You owe me rent for the last 4 months. Where is my rent? Don't give me any excuses. You owe me money. You owe me money. And the non-Jew says, oh, you know how hard it is to make ends meet and this and this. I know it's very hard, but listen, I also have bills to pay, and you agreed to this. This is part of the agreement. You're going to pay rent. Pay the rent. I was very generous. I let you go get by a couple of months. Ad kan, you have to pay me the rent now. You can't let this go on forever. And the Jew sees how hard it is to pay up the money. He's in the same situation. He owes money to a guy, to a Jew. He also owes money. I also owe $1,000 to my fellow Jew. And now, my fellow Jew, he says to me, you don't have to pay me. You don't have to pay me one penny. Shemitah, Karash, obviously I'm telling you extreme things because today there's no such thing like this because there's a prosbul, and this whole thing is just all theoretical. But if you take the din of Shemitah at mamish face value, before Hillel HaZaken came along and made a prosbul, Shemitah is over, a Jew is owed money from a Gentile, and a Jew owes money to another Jew. And he's now in the middle. He goes to the guy, give me my money. And the guy is sitting, I have to go take out a second mortgage to pay you off. Doesn't matter. It's not my problem. You agree. A Jew sees how much pain there is. Then he owes money, that very same Jew owes money to another Jew. And that Jew says, it's Shemitah. Hashem said, you're forgiven. Hashem says, told me, Hashmeit es yodecha, let go. Now it clicks in his mind an appreciation of what Shemitah is. No, so this is the second side of the dilemma. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to tell us when it comes to Shemitah? Shemitah is a halacha that applies to Jews. It does not apply to non-Jews. Why? Every mitzvah only applies to Jews and does not apply to non-Jews. The Tayag mitzvahs. What is going on over here? The answer, so we have we have a dilemma. We have two different mahalchim and understanding why the Torah has to spell out Es ha-nochri tigois v'yesachicha tashmed yodecha. Number one, is it the pshat? Because Hashem wants to give Klal Yisrael an opportunity to flex their muscles in this world. Behave yourself. Uma Yisraelam. We're the boss. We are the Am HaNivcha. We are in control. Hashem selected us. We are the Beis HaMikdash. We represent the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You had an opportunity in Har Sinai and you rejected it. You have acted, you have misbehaved, you have done terrible averos in what you've done to us throughout the generations. Hashem says, Es hanochri tigois. Don't forgive them. Don't forgive them for insulting me by not accepting my Torah. I gave them an opportunity by Har Sinai to accept the Torah. Don't forgive them what Amalek did. Don't forgive what Midian did to you. Don't forgive what Edom did to you. Don't forgive all the nations, the Canaan, what they did to you. Don't forgive them. Here is your opportunity. Es hanochri tigois. They owe you money. Demand payment. Is that the pshat? Or no? It's not the Jewish way to flex your muscles. It's not the Jewish way. A Jew doesn't flex his muscles. You don't take advantage of your superiority. How many times in the Holocaust, when the Holocaust was over, when the Jews were liberated, did the liberators give weapons to the Jews who were skeletons and said, here, here's your chance now. You can go and you can shoot and kill all of you, all the Nazis right in front of you. Here's a weapon, go do it. And how many times, how many were people who said, no, that's not our way. That's Hashem to Hashem. They'll get a moon of shoot to Hashem. It's not our way to go now take a knife and kill these people. Okay? Yeah?
I remember reading very well that the Jews went into money lending because they were very limited in the different jobs they could have. They went into money lending and
they had nothing else to do. Okay, I told you. This is not a practical. This is not a, what I'm telling you now, it's not practical at all because it's a prosbul. And we do, and there's no difference anyway in this manner, I said, because every single Jew, the whole world is based, the whole economy is based on lending money. There's really no difference whatsoever. So this is not a practical discussion. Ever since Hillel HaZaken came along, he leveled the playing field. But I'm talking about theoretically. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, sure. Because the Christians, are not allowed to engage with Islam. Who's not allowed to engage with Muslims?
Oh, Christians also, according to their church, they're not allowed to take religion, they're not allowed to take interest either. They do exactly opposite. I mean, they don't do it, but according to their religion, they're not allowed to take interest from their own, only they're allowed to charge interest to Jews.
So,
okay, if I may, it's not that you're flexing your muscle against the other guy to collect money. That's the norm. The norm is he owes you money, he has to pay it.
Right.
It's a yid is getting
so why
the Torah is giving him a break.
Right.
That's the
So, but now that Hashem is giving us a break, why does the Torah have to go out of its way and say es hanachi goyis? It's obvious. The laws of the Torah do not apply to goyim. They do not apply to Jews against goyim. The Torah there's a tremendous emphasis. Es hanochri tigois. You don't have this. You don't have this approach b'chol Torah kulo except by two places, by hashmotas kisafim and by ribis. There is es hanochri tashich. Bite the goy. Bite him. Take a bite out of his flesh. The word tashich means take ribis. Lend him money. Be a loan shark, like a shark with deep teeth. Lend him money and demand interest. Es hanochri tashich. And here it says es hanochri tigois. What's going on over here? This is unusual. We could figure this out on our own. If we wouldn't say this passage, we would figure it on our own. We have a drasha. We'll figure out 1, 2, 3 that you're allowed to lend money to a guy with ribbis. We would know that when Shemitah comes, you're allowed to collect your loans after Shemitah has passed. What is going on over here in this passage? So here is the dilemma. The two sides of the dilemma are, is the Torah over here coming to emphasize this point in order to give Klal Yisrael some covenant, some dominance, and to understand that in this world, the world operates on money. Everything is about money. As a kesef ya'ane asakol. Don't lower your guard. Klal Yisrael, you're a nation, you're a special nation, you're the Am HaNivchar. Don't humble yourself before the Umay Soila. And in a way that shows dominance without causing any loss of life and not causing anyone to suffer is in the financial markets, show that you're choshev, appreciate your milos. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the gift of Torah and Hashem has selected you to be the Am HaNivchar, don't take that bracha lightly. Don't say, oh, Hashem just gave us a gift, you know, Hashem gave us a sefer Torah, we lock it up in a safe in the basement with chains, like it's a terrorist in Guantanamo Bay. Don't do that. Hashem gave you a gift, appreciate the gift. Appreciate who you are. Now, if you tell that to a guy, you know what they would do? Oh, we're special. They would take out weapons of mass destruction and force every single living creature on this world to do what they want you to do. They would control you. They would dominate you. They would control you how to live your life, what to do, how to pay homage. They would control you entirely. We're not going to ascend. Don't do that. Don't kill them. Don't go to war with them. Don't fight with them. Don't try to colonize the world. You ever have a place in the Torah where it tells you to colonize the world? What is Britain going around and colonizing the world for? What's all that about? What's this whole era in history where every nation, they have to colonize, they have to have alumni minyanim all over the world? What's all this about? The Chabad? What's the whole world colonizing the world? There's this thing in the mind of the Ummah Sa'ilam to control people. They have to control.
Caliphate.
Once you give a person dominance power, oh, you have to control everything. It's a sickness. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, don't do that. But don't take for granted and don't take lightly the gift of being the Am HaNivchar. And the way you can find a middle ground of appreciating who you are without overdoing it is in the financial markets. There es hanochri tigois. If you have a society in Israel, there's no such thing as bankruptcy laws. You borrow money, you owe them. There's no way out of it. Make sure you collect. Shemitah comes, yeah, that's for the Jews, that's not for the Goyim. Make the Torah use this as an opportunity that a Jew should know. Flex your muscles. only in the financial markets, not in any other area. It's a balance of acknowledging your superiority without overdoing it. Yeah.
Just to say, but fairly.
Fairly, of course. That goes without saying. It goes without saying, absolutely fair. That's a given. Now, on the other hand, the other side of the dilemma is no. There is no intent here, es hanochri tigois, whatsoever, for a Jew in any way or form to flex his muscles, not even in the financial markets. The only reason why the Torah said that a Jew should collect his debts is in order that a Jew should appreciate. For some reason, this is a mitzvah that the Torah went out of its way and demands an appreciation of what the mitzvah is all about. The only way you could appreciate what this is all about is if for him yes and him no. In life, you only appreciate something in contrast to something that it's not. So if you are a Jew and you have money owed to you by a goy, and you owe money to a Jew, and you're caught in the middle, and you're going to go to the Gentile, please, give me my money back. I'm not taking no for an answer. And at the same time, the money that you owe to your fellow Jew, you don't have to pay back because it's Shemitah and there's no prosbul and the loan is canceled and you're in the middle. Wow. Wow. I have now an appreciation for this mitzvah like I never had before. The Torah is not telling us anachmi tigois because the Torah wants you to dominate the world. Ridiculous. Go sit in the basement, in your basement, behind your Gemara, and forget about dominating the world. It's not your problem. It's not your business. Your business is to appreciate the mitzvahs of the Torah. And when in this mitzvah, when it comes to money, appreciate the pain that is involved in paying back money, so that when you will not be paying back money, you should appreciate what Hashem is saving you from. If Hashem says, don't pay back loans, and we will not get the goyim involved in this. Okay, I'll have to pay back the money. You don't appreciate the chesed that Hashem did for you by not demanding that you should pay back this money. Now, of course, you have to put everything in the proper context. It's not fair. You can't go borrow money with your loan that in a couple of years, the loan is canceled. Obviously, there's more to it. But there is definitely a principle of cancellation, of forgiveness. A principle of forgiveness. And the only way you can fully understand the depth of what this is all about is the contrast. It's not meant for world dominance. It's exactly the same thing when it comes to ribbis. Ribbis is just another form of shmitas hashmatas kesafim, the forgiveness of debt. I lend money. Kachi darka shalala. When you lend money, you charge interest. If the money is not in my possession, so I'm not able to invest, I'm not able to use this money to my benefit at this moment in time. Of course I'm entitled to charge money when the money is not under my control. That's what you do to your fellow non-Jew. But when it comes to a Jew, don't you dare. Don't you dare. You lend the money with sincerity, even though indeed you're losing an opportunity because the money is not in your possession. The Torah says, do not dare bite your friend by demanding payment of ribbis. So why, same exact question, why did the Torah say here in this particular mitzvah, es hanochri ti gois, you shall take money from the Gentile? Is it because the Torah here is using this mitzvah as an opportunity to tell Klal Yisrael, put the Umay Sa'olam in their place, let them know who the boss is, you have an opportunity to charge them money for lending them money? That's right. Don't let them take advantage of you. Don't let them. You have to have some backbone.
According to the Rambam, you should do it.
The dafka to dominate them.
He says dominate them. Because they do avod zara, therefore you submit to them. The Rambam disagrees, but the Rambam says to do it. It's a chayva.
An obligation. You should go out of the way to lend them money in order to take from them interest to humble them. And that experience of paying interest makes them think, why them, not me? What's going on here in this world? They do some studying, some history. They rejected the Torah. Their ancestors caused Klal Yisrael a lot of harm. Is that the pshat in the mitzvah? So some say that's not the pshat in the mitzvah. And some say, no. Klal Yisrael is not in the business of world dominance. That's not what we're here for. You're here for Yadav Gemara, Vezehu, the Tayag Mitzvahs, in order for you to appreciate what the mitzvah of not lending money to your friend with ribbis is. You have to experience what it is to know what you're not going to do to your friend. And the only way to appreciate the mitzvah of not charging ribbis is to charge ribbis to a non-Jew. Es ha-nochri tashich. That's tigos. That's this mitzvah. That tigos. That's shmita. But when it comes to ribbis, es ha-nochri tashich. That's to bite. Lend him money, charge him ribbis. The dynamics of lending him the money and getting back the ribbis, you're going to see firsthand the evil. And not the evil, but you'll see the pain that is involved in borrowing money and being required to pay back interest. Now you will have an appreciation when it comes to your fellow Jew. Don't do that. Don't cause the pain to your fellow Jew by lending him money and demanding interest. It is nothing more than Torah going out of its way to give us an appreciation of what the mitzvah is. Money is everything, right? And people say, or you get every expression, money is not everything. It's the only thing. When it comes to money, there's a dynamic. And it's specifically in this dynamic of Hashmatas Ksafim and Ribbis, which involves money, where the Torah goes out of its way to tell us our relationship with the Ummah Yisrael. It's not for nothing, the Ummah Yisrael are obsessed with BDS, right? Boycott, divestment, sanctions. This is something which the ice cream, this took on a life of its own. Okay, what's the name of the ice cream? I never in my whole life had Ben and Jerry. I only eat Haagen-Dazs. What could I tell you? Haagen-Dazs, what? So this took a life of its own. Who would ever imagine? Okay, even though supposedly their stock is up and their sales are up, yeah, go come back in a year from now. We'll see what's doing. The Chaf K wrote a letter. We have revoked. We have withdrawn our Hechsher. Our Hechsher. What? Yes. Oh, they changed their mind? I read the letter. They took off their Hechsher. The Chaf K. They didn't? I have on my WhatsApp. I'll go back and read it again. Maybe it's fake news. I actually saw a letter. I don't know. I have to go back and look at it. I thought I saw a letter from the Chaf K in the headlines.
The world is not worried about murder and just ice cream missing.
So it's not called Israel.
The whole thing is a joke anyway. It's not going to make a dent. Exactly. It's not going to make a dent in their business. And these,
right.
It's, yeah, who cares, okay, whatever. Okay, but just
the publicity alone is.
It's what you see the government, they when they talk about terrorism. So what do they say? The people who know what they're talking about, the way to stop is to follow the money and prevent them from their funding. Where are they getting money? Terror costs a lot of money. You think yeshivas cost money? Terror costs money also. They just had a whole thing with bitcoins. That a lot of the terrorist organizations, they've been funded. They're funded through cryptocurrency, and it's very, very it's an impossible thing to stop. Okay, cryptocurrency, it's a very hard thing to stop their funding.
Really,
that what?
Did a number on that? It's
a big deal. Money controls everything. The Torah is well aware of this, and the Torah here, in describing our relationship with the Goyim, it's a fascinating thing what the Torah does over here. The Torah, in defining, it doesn't define our relationship with the Goyim when it comes to kosher food. But you eat kosher food. But to the Goy, make sure you give him treif. Make sure you give. It says you know, lakel tashlichu noso, you throw it to the dog or give it as a gift to a Goy. But there's no bedafka mitzvah that you should bedafka go out of its way to such a degree. When it comes to all of the other mitzvahs, the Torah is not telling us, for the goyim, you do it to the goyim. But you're different. You don't have that. But when it comes to finances, the Torah goes out of its way in two major, major areas of finance and says cancellation of loans. That's a very big thing. In the United States, the world economy, that's a major, major thing. When COVID started, there was this big, big talk about cancellation of student loans. I don't know whatever became of that. It was a big hot topic. Will the government cancel student loans? With all these students, they borrowed an enormous amount of money to go to college, to go to different schools. And now, oh, it's COVID is the excuse for everything. Machulach. What happened at the end? I don't think they canceled at the end. I don't think that they didn't cancel.
On that.
What?
They have not acted on this.
Baruch Hashem.
This is coming from the extreme.
Okay, cancellation, the idea of bankruptcy is such a shocking concept that you can be completely irresponsible in your business. You can mislead your suppliers. You can just make believe everything is fine and good. And they send you merchandise, they send you goods, they provide services, and then bankruptcy, we're not responsible to pay you one penny. You knew you were going out of business. How could you dare order merchandise? How could you dare ask for services when you knew you're going out of business? And the law protects you? The law protects you when you declare bankruptcy?
What you're describing a little bit. So, if we knew that they were going bankruptcy, that's going to be criminal.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. It's
and
complicated.
The people who said no there.
It's not so simple. The bottom line is the laws of bankruptcy allow people to avoid,
evade
responsibility and accountability for their actions. That's what it does when it comes to mammon, which is a concept that is mamish kineged kol ha-Torah kula. So what? The bottom line is there's accountability in life. You borrow money, you take someone's money, you have to give them back the money. I took the money with the best, with the most noble intentions. My business model is solid. I have 50 years to prove that I was profitable. This year, it didn't work out for me. It didn't work out for me. It's mamash a maisa satan. It didn't work out for me. No, I borrowed $1 million. Every year I borrow $1 million. This year I can't pay back $1 million. Too bad for you. You go sell your house. Let them foreclose on your house, not on my house. Your children, no, so you'll have to go collect them to marry them off. Not my children. Is that fair? Is that Torah law? In a Torah society, is there something called bankruptcy laws in the Torah society? I don't know the answer. I really don't. But it doesn't sound right. Something does not sound right about bankruptcy laws. And the Torah here comes to emphasize this. It says, when you deal with non-Jews, there's a principle, there's no such thing as forgiveness. Shemitah, to a degree, it's not accurate, is bankruptcy.
That's
not correct.
That's not an original Torah concept.
Hashmot asks off a reset. There's a lot of talk about this. What exactly
did your father
is?
Write about,
no, I don't think so. I'm sure he did. But I'm not familiar. With the intricacies of all of these concepts. There's a lot of discussion about Yovel. You know who's a big expert on this? Dr. Fruchter. Dr. Fruchter, who is one of the people who started off the shir. He actually brought some white people to come to the shir. He comes on Friday sometimes. His son has devoted his life to study the economics of Yovel. I don't know about Shmita so much, but we're talking about Yovel. Yovel is a reset. It is a reset on the economy. On Yovel, the land goes back to its original owner, right? The land, the old property returns to where it came from. I buy a piece of property, I'm living in this house. So Yovel, it goes back to the original owner. You have to structure the sale and all of you know your business, knowing that in Yovel the economy experiences a reset. And study this idea. Look at the United States. There's a deficit. What's the deficit? Every year, every second, the deficit grows by I don't know millions and millions and a hundred, whatever it is. The deficit is beyond control. I want to ask my father about all this. So he said to me, comes a point in time where the government I don't know what this means. They're moichel themselves. The country owes money to itself. Okay, so there's something called, he told me, there's something called like a yovel in economics. A reset.
Devalue.
Okay, but this, I don't know, I have no idea where this works.
Yeah. Three
zeros from this. A reset. It's like a yovel. In the principle of yovel, there is such a principle of mechila, of mechila. Now people are going to suffer. People are going to suffer one way or another. But there is a point in time in order for the good of everyone. There has to be a reset. And that reset is expressed here in the Torah in two parts. There is yovel, a major reset, and there are six minor resets. You always hear about the Fed, they're going to increase the interest, decrease this, that. Other countries, they already pay you money. It's negative, right? They pay you money to lend. If you'll borrow money, we'll pay you instead of you giving us interest. That's what it's come to. They pay you to borrow money. That's very scary. That's a very frightening thing. There's no safeguards, because what happens when it gets go below that? This is very, very frightening concepts. But the Torah obviously is very well aware of the dangers of accumulation of debt on a large scale. And the Torah says there's a principle called a reset. And there are two major resets in the economy. There is Yovel and there is Shemitah. How does that work? What does it mean? We don't do this anymore because we have Prozbul. There's no Yovel. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, there is no Yovel. And when the Bizman HaZed, there's no such thing anymore as a reset because everyone has.
When Talmud talks about Yovel and Shemitah, is it talking about individuals?
Individuals, of course.
It's
all the same. They're investors. Everything is owned by people. They're partners. So what is a conglomerate? It's a partnership. You have many investors. You have people who different. It's not the same thing. Okay, you listen. Tell me, the corporation. There are people who have money who are invested. There are investors. People are getting dividends. There are people. There are real people that are invested in the company. Who work for the company. They devote their entire life. Yes, there are people. There are individuals. In the Torah, is very well aware of these dangers in the economy getting out of control, and the Torah built into a Torah economy a double reset, a yovel reset, and six minor resets, a major reset in yovel, and six minor resets every 6 years.
You're saying the Torah is aware because it has a Shemitah and Yovel?
Yes. Shemitah and Yovel, clearly, Dr. Fruchter's son, I don't know his name, he devoted an enormous amount of time to study this from a secular perspective, how this works in world economies, the principle of reset, how they reset an economy, and how the Ruach HaKodesh built into the Torah HaKadosha, how it envisioned a Torah society, which doesn't exist today, has not existed probably since the time of the Bais Rishon of Shlomo HaMelech, has not existed, but the theoretical concept of having a Torah, an economy, a Torah society with a Torah economy, how would a Torah society deal with an economy? How do you do this? We don't know how to do this. The world doesn't know how to do this. In America is in a lot of trouble. Okay, there's a deficit. There's people are worried about Social Security. They're worried about healthcare. And other countries have crumbled. Soviet Union fell apart. China has its issues. North Korea, they're literally starving to death. Every country struggles with the economy. How do you do? Venezuela, look what's going on over there in Venezuela. Spanish people were wiped out. People had a lot of money there. They were totally wiped out. How do you deal with this? I don't know anything about this. But you cannot ignore the fact when you read a parasha like this and you learn that there's something called a reset in the economy, yovel, everyone's property goes back to where it came from. Anyone who owes money, you're forgiven. You have to plan ahead, obviously, that you should not be a victim of losing your house, a victim of losing your field, a victim of having money owed to you that's not going to come to you. You have to, obviously, that's part of the calculation. There are people, and you plan ahead, and there's emunah, Don't be stingy when the tone comes to borrow money from you. You're going to say, oh, he's not going to pay me back. There are many variables. There's religious element, other muna, there's chesed. You know, many people today, when they lend money, they're not lending money. They know this is a gift. I know somebody, they said by his levaya that he gave, that he was a big diamond dealer. And his son said, he sat with him in the office, and people, he was very good to the Hamish Olam, from people. This was a very multi-millionaire, this person, and these Hasidim would come to him, and they were diamond dealers also, and some of them, you know, it wasn't going so good for them. They lost a lot of money, and they would come to him, can they borrow some diamonds? Borrow some diamonds, and they'll sell them, and they'll pay them back. So he gave them good stuff, and he told his son, I didn't lend them the diamonds. I gave it to them. I know they'll never pay me back. I know that the matzav is very poor. They're very, 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 they're very sure matzav, and they're not going to be able to pay me back, because when they're going to sell the diamond, they're going to need to pay off the mortgage. They're going to need to marry for child, and basically, I'm giving them tzedakah, the derech covered. I'm making believe I'm lending them the diamond. They'll sell it, and they'll pay me back, and they'll take their commission. I'm giving it to them below cost. But the truth is, I'm giving it to them as a loan, but I'm going to later tell them in a short, you can have it, you can keep it. And that way, it will be tzedakah in a dignified way. Because these guys, they needed this to survive. He was a multi-billionaire, so that he gave tzedakah in such a fashion. That's part of the society. The Torah built that into the society of hashmotas kesafim, and hashmotas kesafim with Yovel. This Yovel, the land returns to where it came from. Mm-hmm. Every 7 years, loans are canceled. The economy needs this. Now here's the chiddush. For you, this is so. But what about foreign policy? Money is owed to you by other countries. Okay, you look at the United States. Who owns the United States? Most of the United States has been bought up by China. So among its own citizens, there's certain laws of bankruptcy. But when it comes to China, you can't say, oh, bankruptcy, China, you're not getting your money. China's not going to take no for an answer. Okay? In America, if someone owes someone, you owe money, oh, bankruptcy, I don't have to pay you. Do you have to pay China? You tell China, oh, no, not your U.S. law. U.S. law states, I declare bankruptcy, I don't have to pay you. Oh, really? You don't have to pay us? You'll pay us good and well if you know what's good for you.
The entire South America did it to the United States two or three times.
What? Yeah.
The entire South America,
yeah,
in different countries, did just that to the United States and other countries two or three times.
So the United States is a fool for letting them get away with it.
So it does happen.
That's a trouble, he said. What are we involved?
Because there are other considerations.
Yeah. Other considerations.
There's political, there's economic.
Oh, okay. There's chesed. Okay. So you said there are other considerations.
There
but
are many countries that default on IMF loans, for example.
Okay, so the United States is blessed that they're able to be moichel the loans because Hashem gave them enormous bracha. So it's good for the world economy, the other considerations. If this country's going to go bankrupt, it'll have a ripple effect. It's a very complicated world. I know nothing about. But one thing we do know is that we do see in the economy debt accumulates. And when debt accumulates, you get to a certain point where a country, an economic system, is in very great danger of collapse. Which
that's
can bring
the United States now.
Every country is like that. Only United States. Sure. Every country is like that. The whole world is in such a mess. That's right. Every country is like that. And you see here in this parasha that the Torah is addressing this. How all of this translates into a practical scheme of setting up a government, I have no idea. Talk to Osher Fruchter. He'll explain to you how all of this works. But it's clear as day. And what is very, very fascinating is the Torah, when it addresses its economic structure, this is the third idea in this dilemma. It says, Es hanochri tigos. Es hanochri sashich. This is a new idea. The first idea I told you was flex your muscles. Let them know who's the boss. They say about us, BDS. You know what we respond to them? I'm a chutzif. Es hanochri ti gois. That's the response to your BDS. Es hanochri ti gois. The response to BDS, you want to sanction us? Es hanochri sashich. That's idea number one. Idea number two, not interested in taking revenge, not interested in world dominance. We're interested in one thing only, to appreciate what it means to your brother. Don't go take advantage of. The only way you can appreciate what it means not to take ribbis from your brother is to take ribbis from a guy. Then you'll get a taste of what it's like to take ribbis. Then, when you know what it's like to take ribbis, only then will you appreciate what it means not to take ribbis. When you get an appreciation of what it means not to cancel a loan, only then can you appreciate what it means to take a loan. Okay, that's number two. Number three. And this is something which is just a raw concept, which I've no really understanding, because you need to be a world-renowned Nobel Prize expert in economics to understand what this means. The Torah here is creating an economic system. In an economic system, there has to be resets. It has to be. Look at this country. It's out of control. There has to be some tikkufa, and this country did have resets. The country, you know, they no longer do we rely upon the gold standard. We go from, by the way, it's 50 years. This is Mamash Yovel from the time that Nixon was the one who fully implemented the transition of an economic system that is not rooted in commodities, in gold and silver. Roosevelt started it. Roosevelt, he started partial removal of connecting the value of the dollar to gold, silver and gold, and Nixon finished it off, completely separated the two. The value of the American dollar is based purely on emuna pshuta in the American government, which is an amazing concept that never even exists, such a thing from the time immemorial, such a concept, to have an economy that's based upon trust, pure trust. It's an incredible concept, trust in the government, and other governments following suit. And now we have a new concept in Israel, we're going to hold on as bitcoins, cryptocurrency. What's the chilek between cryptocurrency and the American dollar? They're both almost the same, they're both based on trust. The difference
the cryptocurrency,
is...
Cryptocurrency, we don't have anyone to blame the trust.
Cryptocurrency, you trust each other. Really, it's what it is. It's you've decentralized the trust. That's the only difference. In the American dollar, who do you trust? You trust Biden. Really? You trust Kamala Harris. You trust the Federal Reserve. You trust the United States of America. You trust them. That's who you're trusting, a government. You're trusting an authority. When you have the shekel chadash, who do you trust? You trust the Israeli government. They're good for their word. The euro is a big mess. Who do you trust? The Union, the European Union, a whole conglomerate of nations. You trust them. You trust there is an address. There is an address. Who do I trust? And I take out a dollar bill. This is $1. Who says it's $1? Who do you trust? 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C. That's who you trust. Not in God we trust. In the American government we trust. That's really the way it is. So what's cryptocurrency? Cryptocurrency is not worth, it's not worth anything. It's nothing intangible. It's decentralized. You trust each other. There's no address. You trust whoever possesses a chelik of this invisible coin, a chelik of this coin. We all trust each other. It's exactly the same principle of trust. There's no value, zero value. There's no commodity. It's pure trust, but it's not a trust in an organization. It's a trust that's like the perfect outgrowth of the internet, of social media, where you build upon the community. You trust everyone in the whole world. The theory is a government could go under one day, chas v'shalom. A government can have a depression, and then the money's not worth anything. But the whole world is not going to go under. The whole world is the whole world. So everyone trusts each other. It's a very complicated thing. All the fun people, they love Trump. All the Chavi, they love Trump. But they don't realize Trump is a soine cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Trump is dead against, he's very, super against cryptocurrency. And all the from people, they love cryptocurrency. The Haredim, they love it. They imagine that it's a get rich quick scheme. And they're heavily invested. From people are heavily invested in cryptocurrency. What?
From rich people?
Everyone, rich and poor. A lot of from people still hate. They're heavily invested in cryptocurrency.
They lost a lot of money.
They lost. It went down from 60,000 to 30,000. Now went back up a little bit. Okay. But Trump doesn't like it because he believes in the country. It's a very big milo. He believes in the country. Live in the country, then cryptocurrency is a nourishment. But going back to this Yisrael, this is a third principle, a third mahalach in appreciating this idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu here is setting up an economic system. And in the economic system, there has to be resets. And this is something which we appreciate. You can't let a deficit reach a point of mega trillions. You're in a lot of trouble. If you periodically have resets, there's something to it. There's something to bankruptcy laws. Obviously, there are bankruptcy laws, even though I told you it's Kenei Kolotero Kula, maybe not. Maybe bankruptcy laws is really an extension of Shemitah, to a degree. How do you balance? So there is something to it. But you can't do that. Torah here is acknowledging there are resets, but here's the beauty, and this obviously is part of the equation. Just because there's a reset internally in your Jewish state, but there is a global market. There's a domestic economy and there's a global economy. When the Jewish state has a reset in their local economy, their domestic economy, that all has to be in relationship to its relationship and its effect on the global economy. Es hanochri loy sashich. Es hanochri sashich. Es hanochri lo sigois. Tigois. Es hanochri tigois. The domestic policy has reset. In the domestic policy, don't take advantage of your fellow Jew and charge an interest. But part of the economic system for it to work means non-members pay more. Non-members don't have these benefits. Torah is acknowledging that it's not a global economy. One size fits all. It's not the way it works. There is Klal Yisrael's domestic economy and its economy in relationship to a global economy, and they have to interact. And for it to interact in a healthy way, there cannot be a reset in its global relationship with the world. No resets. Debt accumulates? Good, let the debt accumulate. That's a necessary evil, or maybe not an evil, in order for the healthy economy, where within the domestic economy, there are going to be six minor resets and one major reset every 50 years. So this is our third mahalach. We have here Es hanochri tigois, Es hanochri tagis, tashich. Three mahalachim. Why? Only when it comes to money is the Torah contrasting Jew versus Gentile. Is it, again, number one, don't let them push you around with BDS. You stick it to them. You let them know who the boss is. Number two, there's no way you can appreciate what money is about until you experience it yourself. And therefore, when it comes to the Gentiles, you'll have the real experience. Now you'll know how to be gracious when it comes to your fellow Jew. Number three, we are creating a healthy, vibrant, economic system for the state of Israel, for Klal Yisrael, and that involves resets for domestically, but not any reset or any different system dealing with the global economy.
That's why they call it Shabbat. It's Shabbat. Shabbat
is also
the same thing.
Once
a week you have to rest.
Rest. Reset. Yeah, okay. Okay, everybody, so I thank you for listening to my nonsense.
perfect.